we are here with thanks to Cadbury, with Ian Wright, Arsenal legend. Ian, maybe just to actually start off on something, obviously there's a big box of chocolate sitting over there, and obviously during your career you obviously have to be quite disciplined. When you look at a box like that now, is it something you kind of jump straight on, or how quickly after the end of your career do you decide you're going to kind of tuck in and start sticking your fingers in?
To be honest, I stuck my fingers in straight away. It's chocolate, and it's something that Arsene Wenger, especially after games, he wanted to get that quick sugar back inside you. It was something that he encouraged. But I've always eat chocolate at every opportunity. I eat chocolate, and it's one of those situations now that I'm doing my gym work and stuff, so there's only a certain amount of chocolate and that you can have, so I make sure that I have my I have like, for instance, the mini rolls, especially Cadbury's mini rolls, but like a Boost, stuff like that, so I have to have one of those things as the guilty pleasure.
Have to. That's a good way to say it. Yeah. Actually, I just wanted to start off on something that was a bit more, I suppose, personal to you. Yes. Sydney Pigden, who was your teacher, and actually watching that video of yourself, I think it's at Highbury, and mm-hmm. he comes down to you, and he's done so much for you in your life. Mm-hmm. I guess the takeaway for me was that his gestures were all little things that did help you, and it turned into a big thing. Was that how you kind of found it? Rather than a grand gesture, it was actually just little tasks here and there that helped.
Well, that's what it comes down to, somebody that cared. And he wasn't doing it because of what was coming out of it for him, apart from the fact that he's a teacher who's trying to put somebody on the path of a decent life and having a good life. You know what I mean? Those little things. And, you know, he was the one that just took me aside and just taught me to read properly, to write properly, to have patience, you know what I mean? To listen to people, you know what I mean? To not be so aggressive. You know, he taught me all those little things that, you know, when I first started to meet, I was just a little wild little guy that, you know what I mean, found it very difficult in the class. Not that I didn't understand what was going on, but it took me a little longer to just try and grasp what was going on in the class and what the lesson was, and then to get on with it. And I always found that when I didn't grasp it as quickly as the other people, I didn't ask the teacher for help, which is something that when I speak to kids now, they show them that video and then we speak about it, and I always try to make them know that you must ask if you're not quite sure. But what Mr. Pigden showed me was, you should ask if there's anything wrong. To the point where, even now, you know, people will say a word and I don't understand it. I say, what's that word mean? He always said that to me. Make sure that you ask. If you don't know, if somebody says something to you and you don't understand a word what they're saying, ask them what it means. Little things like that, you know, are the things what he taught me. It's like I was mentioning about the football. Once he saw that I was quite adept at playing football, I should say, all he wanted to teach me was, listen, Ian, you don't have to blast it at the goalkeeper when you get close. Look where the space is and try and pass it where the space is. That's what he always taught me. It was just little simple things like that. And the patience and the guidance he gave me. And he just showed me love at a time in my life that I needed it. And it's something that he gave me all the way through my life. And apart from those few years where I kind of lost contact with him, couldn't find him. And then once we found him, everybody saw the video. But as somebody that, at a time in my life where I needed a male role model that cared for me and showed me some form of, like, love, he came along.
Yeah, and you said you still think about him to this day.
Every day I'll think about him because, you know, it's very hard to not appreciate him and think about him every day, because every day I feel fortunate with the way it's gone for me from the time I got into football at 22. I know it was late, but every day it makes me realise how fortunate I was that he came into my life when he did, when I was like a 7-year-old, and put me on a road that was going to be a better road than the one that I may have got onto. I don't know where it would have led to, but the fact is, every day I think about him, and obviously he died last year, you know, I think about him all the time. And We posted our meeting again, and, you know, they done the usual thing. People loved it. People sent me messages about
emotional.
Yeah, it is because I think that what people see in that clip is I literally turned back into a child. And what was really strange about it is, because I was always so small and he was such a big man, because he was like 3 or 4 steps higher than me, when I went to hug him, I was still in and around his waist. So it was really
nothing
weird.
Nothing.
And so, you know, it was something that, like I say, you know, I'm thankful that he came into my life. And that is why, like I say, you know, I think about him every day.
I guess before we get to the football, because I wanted to talk to you about like strike partnerships and strikers, I was looking back at footage on YouTube and this was something completely separate, which was Friday Night's All Right.
Yeah.
it's actually about 20 years ago now as well, so time does fly. I mean, obviously you were used to having cameras on you as a footballer on the pitch in a very different way. And then here you're actually on the other side of it with these superstars like Mariah Carey, Will Smith, I think you had Elton John, a few others as well. How did you find that transition? Was it natural or was it something that you just had to kind of adapt to over time?
No, over time you have to adapt to it. But at the outset, it was very adrenaline led. You know what I mean? I'm meeting and talking to world stars, world superstars. So that there was something in that was an adrenaline buzz that you just ride that wave. But as time went by, I realized that doing television in the shiny floor sphere, or what I'd call it, was something that I didn't like it. It came natural just to talk to people and have a conversation with them, which I really enjoyed doing. But in the main, I did not enjoy, as time went by, doing that kind of television. Yeah. I realized not too long after I stopped doing that Friday Night's All Right show that I just want to talk about football, really. And, you know, it took me a few years before I had to finish those contracts and get myself into a situation and a position where I could actually do what I wanted to do, and that was talk about football. But I didn't enjoy that. It wasn't the world wasn't real. There's a lot of things, people say a lot of things and do a lot of things that are not true, and they soft soap you and everybody's all over you. But, like, you know, it was false. It was false, and it was in a world that I wasn't comfortable in after a while.
Yeah.
And so I was quite pleased in the end when it all kind of like, it just kind of came to an end for me.
Yeah. Now that's moving from one box to another type of box now, which is obviously your career within the Premier League with Arsenal, previously with that Crystal Palace. I did want to touch on strike partnerships because we don't exactly see as many of them now as we did. The 1990s was just this era of the players you played with and you were involved with, and then obviously yourself and Mark Bright, Andy Cole and York, Shearer and Sutton, so many of them, and we all kind of grew up with that. On your own kind of transition, like, you start off with Brighty and then you have Alan Smith then when you go to Arsenal, and then
Campbell,
and Kevin Campbell, who we've had on before, and Dennis Bergkamp. I was reading a bit of a passage from Alan Smith's book actually, because it was interesting. Arsenal used to have more, like, I suppose they would actually work on the actual specific attacking moves, and you were able to play off the cuff. And he actually found that as quite an interesting transition, going from something that's actually quite set piece orientated to playing with you, where you're able to, you know, where the goal is, and it changed his game a little bit. Did you have to adapt to other strikers, or do you have to kind of just focus on your own movement, or how does it kind of work?
I think the only one I adapted to was Dennis. Because Dennis played in a different area of the field. He was in front of me, trying to create space for me to run into. When he had time on the ball and there was space behind me, it was foregone that Dennis was going to find me. But in respect of the other players that I played with, like Mark Bright taught me a lot about playing with playing up front as a two, and where I should go as a smaller, more quicker, more mobile striker. You know, when he's going up for the ball, you know, just gamble on the fact that he will win it. So you gamble and you're in. You know, I mean, Alan Smith was more, you play into him. Some of the times he'd flick it on. But in the main, Arsenal played a different game to Palace. They tried to play through the midfield more. So Alan Smith would link up the play, then he'd lay it in, and then I would then go off at a third man pass or something like that. And, you know, I just adapted to whatever they were doing. It wasn't a case that, you know, we still had to do structured play at Arsenal in set pieces and stuff like that. But in the main, like, I was an instinctive player, and that is what Arsenal bought.
Yeah.
You know, if I was going to go to Arsenal and they were going to try and put me in a situation where they wanted me to toe a line or play in a certain way, they didn't need to do that because they had Kevin Campbell, who could probably have done that job. And even with me and Kevin Cameron, when me and Kevin played together, it's brilliant. They didn't think that we'd have been able to do it at first, but we worked on that, and we were able to play with each other. But George Graham just gave me the rein to just, when you're up there, just do what you do. Yeah. And that is why, you know, some of the goals I scored were a little bit more unconventional to a normal goal, because I was able to express myself in that area of the field and do whatever I wanted.
So it's kind of like an organized chaos actually kind of work. Like, exactly. It's good to be organized, but there has to be a little bit of something else there.
There's got to be some X factor in there, you know what I mean? It's what makes you, all of a sudden, you know, if people know that there's a regimental kind of vibe to what you're doing, they'll work that out and then they'll stop it. But if you've got something where, okay, they've got a little bit of regimentation in there, but, you know what I mean, we don't know what he's going to do in this situation, then, you know what I mean, you've got something that they're not going to be able to... they're not going to be able to factor in to their plans, and then, you know what I mean, that's where you maybe you're able to beat a team and nick the goal and then open them up, and then all of a sudden we're able to beat them more comfortably.
Like, we have a situation with Ireland at the moment where obviously Robbie Keane, who scored just tons of goals at international level, has retired. Shane Long is one of the strikers that's up there, and I guess we try and maybe judge them and compare them, whereas they're two very different strikers, and also the team plays in a very, very different way, whereas Robbie played with a strike partner like Niall Quinn, who was at Arsenal at one point, and then Shane Long sometimes is foraging up front on his own. And I wonder, and as a pundit maybe, is it fair to judge strikers or try and compare them sometimes without thinking about the overall structure?
I think that, yeah, but you say that, and people, I think strikers will always be judged on the goals they score, amount of goals they score, and this is where it's going to be interesting to see how people see how they take Shane Long, somebody that looks to me like he's got a lot of ability and that, but just doesn't seem to score enough goals for himself, and that's what happens, you know. Same thing happened with Emelecki. People will judge you on the goals. It's you know, the structure is all part and parcel of the way the team is going to play and how you want the team to play, and hopefully it can be successful with the structure and the philosophy that the manager's got, what they're trying to do, but it still boils down to you as a striker putting the ball in the net, and at the end of the day, that is what you're going to be judged on, you know. And I'm judged on the goals I scored, you know what I mean. I'm quite pleased with the plaudits that I get, but the fact is, if I feel that if I was playing now, there's so much work to be done in respect of you foraging up front on your own, and hopefully you can get into a situation where you have seasons like Mo Salah had or Harry Kane has and stuff like that. But it's tougher, it's harder, because I'm finding that some of the times you see they're way over on the left or way over on the right, or they're deep, they're not in around the 18 yard box or the semicircle on the 18 yard box, where I like to ply my trade so as I can be in and around the ball bouncing or the ball coming into that area, because that's where it's got to come, and you're then able to finish it off because you're judged on goals. And that is what I say to people all the time, you know. Emelecki gets a bad rap because people they almost talk about him in ridicule fashion because of his so-called goal record. But what he done for the team...
Whereas Michael Owen actually
speaks highly of him because of what he done for the team. And that is what... This is what, coming back to your point... you know, is our players are judged, or our strikers are judged, and like I say, you know, as a team player, Michael Owen will say he's amazing, but like, you know, you might ask some managers or stuff like that and say, yeah, he needed to score maybe a few more goals.
At the moment, Arsenal obviously have Lacazette and Aubameyang kind of playing together, and I guess there was a question mark before the two of them were put together whether they can play with each other. Seems to be working, though. And I think the thing that's great to see, and it comes from your era and then also the Arsene Wenger era when they had Henri, the amount of pace up front, it's frightening.
Yeah, we've got a lot of pace now. And, you know, when you back up, you can bring someone like Iwobi on as well with his pace. You know, he's still got the creativity of Mkhitaryan and Ozil. But then when you look at them two, who are obviously very, very good friends, we can see that. But they play quite close to each other once the ball gets into that final third of the pitch. Of course, Aubameyang starts in and around the left side, you know, because that's a position he's used to playing. He played at Dortmund before they moved him into the centre, where he then got his 40 goals, which was, you know, he was amazing playing down the centre like he was. But it's not a position that's an alien to him. You know, we know that Lacazette is more a central striker. He's focusing on a central, but you see them, they change positions some of the times. You don't see it to the point where Lacazette will be dropping right back to the left back slot to try and close down somebody, but what you will see that he will sometimes pop up on the left side or the right side, and Aubameyang will pop up in the middle. And that is what they've got the license and the scope to do, because both of them are very capable of, for me, 20 goals a season. Both of them.
Yeah. Actually, just from your match of the day things, I particularly love, because I watch it every Saturday night if I'm in, and I particularly love the rapport you and Alan Shearer have. There's always a bit of banter, and Gary Lineker as well. There's a nice trio there, and the three of you are there together. I guess, would you have known Alan particularly well beforehand, or, like, obviously from England duty, but maybe would you have got to see that side of him, or is that something just from being in studio, you kind of get to know each other?
Well, obviously, Gary Lineker was a bit of a hero when I got into the England side. He was the one who I watched, and he was the guy that I watched how he made his runs. I was fortunate to be able to watch him for about 2 years, and you know it helped my game a lot. So I knew him, and then I just knew Shearer from being in and around England squad for the amount of time that we was around it. And he's always the problem that people have is that they don't know Alan Shearer. They didn't know him, and once he first got into punditry, People didn't like what he was saying, because they said he's not saying anything, he's sitting on the fence, he's this and that. But that was the early doors, the early days, I should say. But when we were in the England camp of a minute, so much fun, so much of a laugh. One of the lads, he's another one of those leaders who knows how to be a captain and be a mate at the same time. And we've just found that as the years have gone by, you know, we're working together. We just enjoy working with each other. And he's very, you know, I mean, we're two kind of different personalities, but deep down, there's devilment in Alan Shearer. People don't know. But now they're starting to see it now. Yeah. You know what I mean? Which is really good, because he's got the kind of personality that, because of the greatness that he produced on the football pitch, and he's got his record, which is still there. Who's going to get that record? I do not know. But the fact is, not only was he a great striker, but he's a really decent bloke. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm really pleased that I could call him my friend and we have such a good time now. Yeah. Just can't beat him at golf. He's just too good. I can't beat him at golf.
Well, you're better than me anyway, because I've never held a club in my life. But I suppose a final question. Just actually, Robbie Fowler was here about, I think, 3 years ago, and I was kind of talking to him about that era of 90s strikers, and there were so many of you all vying for the same spot in the, you know, or at least two spots in the England squad, and like you probably all would have got 100 caps if you'd all played in separate eras, and like even like Andy Cole only got 15 caps, whereas he would have got plenty more. When you look back at it, it's obvious in terms of the competition between yourself, Fowler, Shearer, and everyone else. Was that something always at the back of your mind, just to be kind of beating them at least on the pitch?
Absolutely. I think that everybody came in. This is why, you know, Shearer's got to get so much credit. You know, you come in and you nick two goals, and someone said, "Yeah, Shearer scored four." You know what I mean? You score a hat trick, Shearer will score two. So whatever happens, you come in and he scored, and you say Sheringham scored a hat trick today, Fowler scored two, Ferdinand scored, Andy Cole scored. It was like when you were training, when you're playing, you knew you had to be scoring, because everybody, the standard was so high in respect of goal scorers and the goals that they were scoring.
And were you looking at the goal scoring charts
always,
all the time?
Yeah. Always, always. Of course, you had to. You had to, because like it drove you on. And I remember when I first got into the England side and watched how they finished, it was amazing. And then when we got to the stage, I remember it was me, Alan Shearer, Teddy Sheringham, Robbie Fowler was in the squad at one stage. I think, was Coley in there? I'm not sure if it was Coley, but he may have been in there. But I remember we had a training session, a shooting session, where no one missed the target. And it was amazing, because the standard was so high, I realised what it took to be at that level. So what that done to me, inadvertently, has made me, when I went back to training, I made sure I didn't miss the target, because I'm thinking, wherever they are doing their training, they're not missing the target. So I got to make sure that I'm continuously hitting the target. And those are the kind of things you take away from being with the best. And I was quite fortunate enough to be with the best.
major mark, obviously, as well. Ian Roy, thanks a million for taking the time. I think the Cadbury box is calling to you there, so we'll end it there. Thanks a million.
Thanks.
Cheers.
Very much.
Thank you.
Cheers.